This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The 21st International AIDS Conference, known as AIDS 2016, has opened in Durban, South Africa. About 18,000 people are expected to attend this week. The theme is Access Equity Rights Now. The conference was held once before in Durban, back in 2000.
That's VOA's Joe DiCapua reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, 50,000 people are expected to converge on the Midwestern U.S. city of Cleveland, Ohio today for the Republican National Convention. And four Kenya police officers are charged with murder in the June 23rd killing of a human rights lawyer and two others. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, 50,000 people are expected to converge on the Midwestern U.S. city of Cleveland, Ohio today as the Republican National Convention opens this evening. Tonight's theme is Make America Safe Again. It comes during increased national turmoil over police shootings and the aftermath of violence. Convention organizers anticipate street protest by extremist political groups from both sides of the political spectrum. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's supporters and his opponents have repeatedly clashed outside the candidate's events in recent months. My colleague Vincent McCorry is in Cleveland, Ohio, covering developments. He spoke with me about tonight's expectations and concerns.
Certainly, Kim, you can expect that supporters of the Republican Party presumptive presidential candidate will use this as an opportunity to attack President Obama for what they consider as not having been as supportive of the men and women in blue. They're definitely going to mention all these incidents and, of course, see where they can hit hard at President Obama, and then by extension, of course, imply that Hillary Clinton should not be elected president because she'll pursue the same positions and the same policies as President Barack Obama.
I understand one of the headliners tonight is Melania Trump. Do you know what her focus is going to be?
We know that, first, this will be a great opportunity for her to showcase what kind of first lady she could become, being really a non-traditional first lady. You know, having been a model, she's a naturalized immigrant. She's expected to present her husband as a strong man. In the past, she's been heard saying that Mr. Trump is a man who does not take any punches lying down, that if you attack him with one punch, he'll give you 10. Because he believes in fighting, and therefore he will fight for the Americans if they elect him. We expect to hear such a strong speech from her. There is a likelihood of making references to fighting against Islamic radicalism so that he can make America great again. Of course, along with other speakers who are slated to speak this evening.
Looking at the city of Cleveland, I understand the police department has really put a lot of effort into making it a safe place to be tonight. So how has the Cleveland Police Department really beefed up security?
Along with the 500 or so dedicated force here in Cleveland, the city of Cleveland has brought in roughly 2,500 law enforcement officers from as far as California, Florida, and Texas to bolster the security here. And if you look at the security checks around the city, they are thorough. Going through the checkpoints, for example, to get to the arena where the convention is taking place, or even at the venue where journalists are working from, it is a tough thing. I mean, they open up the bags. They have to go through every little thing in that bag. Cameras have to be turned on. They have to make sure every cable is what it's supposed to be. And one other thing, you know, there have been many, many road closures, blocks upon blocks from the convention center and also the Quicken Loan Arena where the convention is taking place have been cordoned off just to ensure that nobody is getting any closer there except those who have reason to be going to the arena itself, like the delegates and the journalists. But even getting there is a painstaking process just because the security is such thorough in their checking, it's not easy to get anywhere closer to the arena where the convention is taking place.
So, of course, there is the expectation that there will be protesters there. So I guess these protesters will be kept far from the convention site. And also, what kind of a mix of protesters are they expecting tonight?
First, there were protests yesterday, for instance, and this was a mix of the Black Lives Matter protesters, but also there are some anti-Trump protesters. We expect to see more of that. Of course, they're protesting away from the arena because the arena has been cordoned off. There are areas, there's a street where they're allowed to protest. But we expect a mix of that. In fact, there was even talk of the new Black Panthers, and then there are the Oath Keepers, along with the supporters of Mr. Trump, of course. They're expected to be in the protests there. We expect the situation to get explosive a little later today, possibly, but that will be a little bit away from where the convention is taking place.
That was my colleague Vincent McCorry speaking from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Well, the convention promises to be one of the most closely watched political gatherings in recent memory. The convention is expected to climax on Thursday night when businessman, reality TV star, and self-proclaimed outsider Donald Trump is expected to claim his party's nomination for president. But what is a political convention in normal times? And how might this year's gathering stack up against historical trends? VOA's Adam Phillips asked two experts for their views.
Journalist, presidential historian, and best-selling author Jonathan Alter has attended nearly every national political convention since 1976. He says the notion that political conventions represent a sort of rough-and-tumble democratic debate over whom to nominate is mostly a myth.
Nowadays, conventions are mostly elaborate television shows, and they no longer have much of a deliberative process in actually selecting the nominees. You have to go back to 1952 for the last time a convention had more than one ballot.
Alter is talking about a so-called contested convention, when the identity of the nominee is unknown at the time the convention opens. So the delegates from each state, from elected officials to ordinary citizens selected by their local party organizations, vote to select the nominee. If no candidate gets over 50% of the delegates' votes, there is a second ballot, then a third, and so on. Meanwhile, delegates cajole, argue, and strategize to get other delegates to select their candidate. Alter says that disputes over whom the nominee should be were not always settled democratically.
Many of them were resolved in what are called smoke-filled rooms. When the convention was deadlocked, the party big shots, the party elders, would get in a room, 6, 8, 10 people, and they would cut political deals and throw their support in exchange for a cabinet position. They would wheel and deal, and then they would come out with some kind of agreement, and then there were still great drama and excitement when they took the roll call to see how the delegates voted.
According to presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning author Doris Kearns Goodwin, those smoke-filled rooms began to clear out just prior to the Republican convention of 1912. That's when Theodore Roosevelt, who had been president 4 years earlier, wanted to challenge the sitting president, William Howard Taft, for the party's presidential nomination.
And he knew that Taft, as the sitting president, would have the party leaders on his side, and the delegates would be already tied up from the party to support Taft. What Teddy Roosevelt believed was that he represented the wishes of the people as a whole, so he led a crusade to create primaries, which meant that the states could decide for themselves who they wanted to send to the convention rather than the party leaders deciding who to send.
Theodore Roosevelt won a majority of those primaries, but Republican Party elders chose to nominate Taft at the convention anyway. Roosevelt then started his own party, the Progressive or Bull Moose Party.
And then, of course, the two ran against each other, and they both lost to the Democrat Woodrow Wilson. So the incredibly interesting thing today is that had the party leaders chosen their nominee in the old system, there's no way they would have chosen Mr. Trump. They would have probably chosen Jeb Bush, the brother of former President Bush, but primaries were won by Mr. Trump. So you see that same battle right now, a lot of Republican Party leaders wanting a different choice than the primary choice.
Kearns reminds us that American political parties are not official government affairs. They are essentially huge private clubs.
Absolutely. I mean, the parties make their rules. They can change them every 4 years. They could change them this year if they wanted to, except for the fact that there is this sense of legitimacy on the part of the nominees that the people have chosen. So they would have to fight the presumption that they're doing something wrong.
This reveals a basic tension in America's democracy. On the one hand, there's the idea that the will of the people must be respected. That view assumes that the populace understands the issues at stake and is able to make an informed choice over which candidate will best serve the interests of the people and the nation.
What worries me is that the system depends now so much on which candidate has more money, which one makes the most interesting remark at one of these debates. The question is, are the people really focused? Do the people really think about it in the long term?
Yet history also shows that concentrating political power in the hands of party elites has its own dangers.
That was partly what people were revolting against when they created the primaries, the feeling that the party leaders were, in a certain sense, in league with big business or with moneyed interests. Now, of course, people will say, well, so are the candidates. So, you know, both systems have their strengths and weaknesses.
According to Jonathan Alter, this week's Republican National Convention in Cleveland promises to be anything but conventional. The challenge for the Democrats will be to make their convention interesting, he says. I don't think the Republicans are going to have that problem. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Four Kenyan police have been charged with murder for allegedly killing a human rights attorney, his client, and their taxi driver who had picked them up after a court hearing last month. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
The next chapter of a high-profile police extrajudicial killing case played out Monday in Nairobi when four Kenyan police officers were charged in the High Court with the murder of Nairobi-based lawyer Willie Kimani, his client Joseph Atmuenda, and their taxi driver Joseph Morori. Law Society of Kenya President Isaac Okero says his group has taken a very keen interest in the case, but they know it is one among many extrajudicial killing cases in the country.
This one is of great significance to us because it is the first one in which we have lost a member of the bar, and that's an indication to the members of the bar and to the members of the Kenyan public that even the agents of the advancement of the rule of law are now vulnerable to this sort of action.
Kimani, Mwenda, and Morori were abducted and reportedly taken to a police compound on June 23rd after a court hearing in which Kimani was defending his client against what they said were false police charges stemming from an accidental shooting of Mwenda by a police officer in 2015. Their bodies were pulled from a river roughly 70 kilometers from Nairobi about a week later. Autopsy results presented in court revealed that the men suffered signs of torture. Mwenda suffered crushed testicles and a fractured skull, while the other two men had injuries sustained by a blunt object.
The brutality of the manner in which these three young men were killed appears to have been intended to send a warning out to any other Kenyans who want to challenge the impunity of these officers.
The incident sparked protests by human rights groups and the Law Society of Kenya, as well as a call for a week-long national attorney boycott. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. While the 21st International AIDS Conference, known as AIDS 2016, has opened in Durban, South Africa, about 18,000 people are expected to attend this week. The theme is Access, Equity, Rights, Now. The conference was held once before in Durban back in 2000. VOA's Joe DeCampawa reports.
International AIDS Society President Chris Baber says while much progress has been made against HIV/AIDS, much more needs to be done.
Millions of people are still being left behind. More than a million people still die of HIV/AIDS every year, and another 2 million become newly infected with HIV. Concerning data released last week show that overall, new HIV infections among adults have stalled, failing to decline for the last 5 years. Newer prevention tools like PrEP are out of reach for the great majority of people who could benefit from them.
The professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health is the international chair of AIDS 2016. Behrens says stigma and discrimination continue to block access to treatment and prevention.
The human rights of those at greatest risk, gay and bisexual men, transgender people, people who inject drugs, sex workers, and prisoners, are persistently violated throughout the world. And these key populations now represent more than a third of new infections worldwide. That's why the theme of AIDS 2016, Access, Equity, Rights, Now, throughout this week, we'll be putting these words into action.
Also welcoming delegates to Durban is local co-chair Olive Shosana, head of the South African Human Sciences Research Council. She says in 2000, South Africa had one of the highest HIV prevalence rates in the world. She says after the conference was held in the developing world for the first time, things slowly began to change.
The landmark AIDS 2000 conference in Durban, it served as a catalyst for historic change. It launched a global movement to bring life-saving HIV treatment throughout Africa and the developing world.
She says, however, that while deaths from HIV/AIDS have fallen, it is far too soon to declare victory over the epidemic that officially began in 1981. Millions of people, she says, still need treatment. Shosana says the meeting will allow the world to take a hard look at what still needs to be done. Ban Ki-moon is attending the AIDS conference. This will be his last as UN Secretary General. Mr. Ban called for a new era to finally end the epidemic.
To end this epidemic, we must close the gaps and that keep people from accessing services and living with dignity. We have to expand resources, science and services. And we have to protect and promote the rights of people living with HIV.
Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa represented the South African government at the opening of the 21st International AIDS Conference. He noted that the conference opened on the birthday of former South African President Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela's memory and the holding of this conference gives us all an opportunity to understand the gravity and of the epidemic while enabling us to look at a number of innovative solutions to ensure that we achieve an AIDS-free society in our lifetime.
UNAIDS Chief Michelle Sidibe says 17 million people are now receiving HIV treatment, but he fears much of the progress that's been made may be lost because donor funding has fallen.
Let me say clearly to all of you that I'm scared. I'm scared because we are back again in South Africa, in Durban, in difficult times. The world is facing many other competing priorities, terrorism, migration, so many issues.
He says if the downward funding trend continues, it will not be possible to end the epidemic by 2030.
The risk is that we'll have a rebound in this epidemic, and I cannot be dishonest with you. I need to say we will have a resistance. We'll be losing our investment. We will have to pay more later. We saw that with malaria.
16 years ago, antiretrovirals were scarce and expensive in South Africa. That lack of access was due in large part to then-President Thabo Mbeki denying HIV caused AIDS. The Treatment Action Campaign led the fight in the streets and in the courtrooms to make life-saving medicine available. And Kansani Mavasa is the current chairperson. She says great progress has been made in providing treatment, but warns many people are not taking their medicine every day.
We are having challenges when it comes to adherence. We are having patients that are untraceable, of which it indicates that we're still having challenges. It's not only in South Africa, also in other African countries we are encountering those kind of challenges.
Mavasa also spoke of the global challenges.
We know that globally 6,000 people are infected daily. We know that currently yearly 2 million people are getting infected. That means we are not yet there. We're still having challenges when it comes to prevention. It's not only in South Africa, also in many other countries, African countries, we know those things are happening.
The final speaker at the opening plenary session of AIDS 2016 was Academy Award-winning actor and South African Charlize Theron. She is the founder of the Charlize Theron Africa Outreach Project and is a United Nations Messenger of Peace. She called for more attention to be paid to teenagers.
Until we actually effectively reach these young people and get them effectively engaged, to empower them, to want better for themselves, to have the tools, the resources to do that, nothing is going to change in the fight of this epidemic. We will be maintaining AIDS. I believe that reality is with the youth. I think they will be the generation, if we bring them into the room and if we let them truly be part of this conversation, who will be the generation to end AIDS.
The International AIDS Conference ends Friday, July 22nd. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports and tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Political conventions are a critical part of the American electoral process. Our job is to put the conventions, the candidates, and the issues into context for our listeners. Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's conventions starting July 18th on VOA.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert?
Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America.